Well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for breaking up the week with plenty of entertainment this afternoon. It is Wednesday, June 21st. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, we'll hear from Ireland manager Vera Powell ahead of the Girls in Green friendly against Zambia tomorrow night. Nadine Doherty and Aisling Connolly will be chatting all things ladies football and camogie, with plenty of talking points both on and off the pitch. While Cathal Dennehy will be dialing in with the latest in the European Games in Poland after a very positive day for Team Ireland on the track. All that plus the latest sports news headlines makes up the show. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. Great to have your company. Nadine Doherty, very happy summer solstice to you.
You too, yeah. Lovely day. Great Lots day. To chat about.
Yeah, 3:57pm was a... exactly the summer solstice, if you, just in case you were wondering.
I was awake,
it is great to have your company today, this evening. Loads of news headlines to get through. We will be chatting LGFA and camogie, yourself and Aisling, very shortly. Plenty of talking points, as I said, so I'm very much looking forward to that conversation.
Absolutely.
News headlines, starting with cricket. The Ireland men's cricket team slipped to a second successive loss in World Cup qualifiers in heartbreaking fashion with a final ball defeat. It is yet another disappointing outcome for the Irish after losing to Oman on Monday. Curtis Camphor looked as he would be the hero of the day at Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, coming to the crease with Ireland reeling at 33 for 4 before rattling off a vital century to help Ireland post a total of 286 for 8. That looked like plenty when Scotland slumped to 152 for 7 in reply. But then the Scots mounted a comeback to put a massive dent in Ireland's World Cup qualification hopes. They needed 2 runs off the last ball. A thick edge saw Scotland finish with a boundary 4, much to the disappointment of Ireland. In rugby, Leinster will take on La Rochelle once again in next season's Champions Cup after the sides were drawn together in Pool 4 for the 2023-24 season. As well as the defending champions, Leo Cullen's side will also take on Stade Francais, Leicester Tigers and Sale Sharks in their pool games, with 2 of those games set to be home and 2 away. The DHL Stormers complete Pool 4, although Leinster will not play against their fellow URC side. Meanwhile, URC winners Munster will likely be pleased with their draw in Pool 3. Graham Rowntree's side will face familiar opponents in Northampton Saints and Exeter Chiefs from the Premiership, while their French opponents will be Toulon and Bayonne, who finished 7th and 8th in the top 14 respectively. Glasgow Warriors complete the group. Ulster have been handed a tough assignment with Dan McFarlane's side in Pool 2, where they will play Racing, 5-time winners Toulouse, Harlequins and Bath, while Cardiff are the second URC side in the pool. Connacht's return to the Champions Cup will see them reunited with their former coach Pat Lam when they face Bristol. They're also drawn with Premiership winners Saracens, as well as French sides Bordeaux Begley and Lyon. The layout of the games is yet to be confirmed, with the EPCR stating that an algorithm will determine the home and away fixtures for each side. Rugby and algorithms, what more could you want? Limerick hurling captain Declan Hannan is not sure if he will play again this season, as he battles to recover from a knee injury. Hannan limped off in the second half of the Munster final. Speaking to RTÉ Sport today, the Adair man would only say that he was hopeful of being back if the 4-in-a-row chasing treaty make it to a 4th successive decider. In football, in association football, Shamrock Rovers will face Danish champions FC Copenhagen if they reach the second qualifying round of the Champions League. The Danish side reached the group stages of the Champions League last season, were unbeaten at home as they managed to earn draws against eventual champions Manchester City, Europa League winners Sevilla and Bundesliga runners-up Borussia Dortmund. On Tuesday, Stephen Bradley's side discovered their first qualifying round fate, receiving a favourable draw, which will see them meet the winners of the preliminary round with teams from Andorra, Montenegro, San Marino and Iceland competing in that. Victory in the first qualifying round would secure Rovers a Europa Conference League playoff at worst, where they will face competition from Faroe Islands Ki or Hungarian record champions French Faros in that second qualifying round of the Conference League. So good news all around there for the League of Ireland. Sticking with football, Dara O'Shea is off to Burnley apparently, so the deal is on the cusp of being completed. Friend of the show David Snaid has a good article on the 42.ie, I believe, of that deal. So Dara O'Shea will be applying his trade in the Premier League with Vincent Kompany's Burnley if that deal goes through. So hopefully it does for Dara O'Shea, Ireland international. Sticking with football and off the pitch from football, and that is that Scottish football broadcaster and indeed regular contributor to Game On 2FM, Roddy Forsyth, says he is somewhat emotional after announcing he's to retire because of Parkinson's disease. The BBC Radio 5 Live correspondent said after Scotland's Euro 2024 qualifier against Georgia last night, that will be his last match after more than 40 years of service with BBC Radio. And here's the man himself, Roddy, chatting to BBC Radio after that match in Hampden.
Yes, I'm afraid this is the last game I'll cover as a Scotland reporter for BBC Sport, and that's 42 years after I made my first contribution. And sadly for me, it's a combination of Parkinson's disease and osteoarthritis that's made it too difficult to continue lugging equipment and sitting outdoors at Scottish grounds in midwinter for 4 or 5 hours. So now I have to call it a day. I still expect to make contributions on a more sedentary basis. I hope so anyway. If I may say something about Parkinson's. At a full house like we had tonight of 50,000 people here, the odds are that 100 people in the crowd will have Parkinson's. This is twice as many as it would have been 25 years ago. Parkinson's is the world's fastest growing neurological disorder, and it afflicts 145,000 people in the UK. No cure's yet been found, but recent research has uncovered exciting lines of inquiry. So if you get the chance to contribute to a Parkinson's charity, please help. You'll be investing in a healthy future for yourself and your loved ones. And in the meantime, can I please say a massive thank you to BBC Sport, my terrific colleagues, and its wonderful listeners for making this job such an exceptional experience. It wouldn't have been possible without you. Thank you. I miss the interaction with the listeners. We've got great listeners. I say listeners, I'm always in my mind just talking to one, and that's whoever's listening. Could be any number of millions or hundreds of thousands. I've always got one in my mind. And I made a rule for myself from the beginning. I would never use the word tragedy or the word disaster to describe a missed penalty kick, because I'm also aware that there are real disasters and tragedies in the world, and there are individual ones with people in hospital with illnesses that may not be curable or cured. And I always feel when we're speaking to them, let's remember, football is a drama. It's a game. It can be trivial, but it can also be high drama. It's exalted. It's wonderful. And it's such a privilege to be not merely allowed to come here and describe it, but to be paid to do so, to share your enthusiasm and joy and love with other people.
They're the words of Roddy Forsyth, an absolute gentleman, a brilliant communicator who, of course, has led audiences through the twists and turns of the game for decades with his memorable commentaries and analysis. He was actually on Game On last night and then was working at the Scotland match. Plenty of entertainment in that Scotland match, of course, with the delayed match because of the weather. An insightful, entertaining, hilarious at times, and above all, an absolute gentleman. And hopefully we will hear his dulcet tones on Game On once more. I know producers and presenters here would have had a lot more dealings with Roddy than I did. I think my first ever show that I did here not too long ago, Roddy Forsyth was on. Never met him before or anything, and I think one of the producers may have said to him that it was my first show, and we were chatting just before we came on there, and he was just reading off jokes and just putting you at ease, because you know the way, Nadine, you sometimes have that kind of new job jitters or anything else, and he was just so helpful. And then when you're on air, he was just entertaining, and I've always laughed, and at the time being informed, which is exactly what you want from a broadcaster. It's
yeah, and even him speaking there, I mean, he puts a lot into perspective, doesn't he? Mm. You know, in terms of sport and life and everything in general. And look, I know we're going to get on to pressing matters here with our female athletes, but you know, listening to Roddy there, he's talked a lot of sense for 40 years, and to finish with a lot of sense there is lovely as well.
Absolutely. Brilliant words, an absolute poet. And as I said, hopefully we'll be on Game On once again. Nadine, you did mention we are going to be chatting Gaelic games. We're also going to be chatting athletics with Cathal Dennehy. And we'll hear from Vera Powell, Niamh Fahy and Chloe Mustaki ahead of the Ireland-Zambia match tomorrow. So plenty to come here on Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Wednesday evening's Game On. Nadine Doherty, former Donegal footballer, is still with me in studio. And former Galway Camogie star Aisling Connolly joins us on the line as well, because we are going to chat Gaelic games, and we're going to review and preview, of course, the weekend's action on the pitch. But before we do, we're going to chat about the off-pitch issues at the moment, because inter-county Camogie and women's football panels have stated that they will play the remainder of the season under protest and have warned not to expect business as usual in the coming weeks and months. Representatives of the two inter-county codes incorporating intermediate and junior squads also came together at a press conference on Monday, arranged by the Gaelic Players Association, to outline their frustration at the LGFA, Camogie Association and the GAA to engage in the discussions to develop a charter designed for inter-county players. So through the GPA, the two inter-county codes warned that they are no longer prepared to wait for a charter to be drawn up. Their statement read, "Regrettably, we feel that our national governing bodies do not want to hear our real concerns, so we're speaking directly to you. We will play the remainder of the 2023 Championship under protest. The main request has been well documented. We ask the LGFA, the Camogie Association and the GA to engage in discussions with the GPA to develop a charter designed for female players to be implemented in the 2024 season. This charter would establish minimum standards for our collective welfare." They added, "Despite initial positive indications, the GA has since declined our proposal. The Camogie Association did, however, request a presentation to be made to their Art Corlia, which took place last weekend. Regrettably, the Ladies Gaelic Football Association has not deemed it appropriate to respond. Their primary rationale is that they prefer to complete the integration process before initiating a charter for female players. Despite the evidence presented, they expect us to wait to patiently endure the treatment of second-class citizens." Nadine, strong words. Now, the Camogie Association and LGFA Association did release statements, which I will read out now momentarily. But just, are you surprised, or I suppose, are you disappointed that it's had to come to this?
I'm not surprised. I'm not disappointed either, because the fact that you're not surprised, you can't be disappointed that it came to this. But to see the players come together on Monday, Shane, it was bittersweet, I suppose. I mean, it was disheartening in one way that in 2023 we have female inter-county players essentially paying to play county football. They're without the basics. Yet in another way, it was really empowering, and it was really emotional as well to see them, because they're fighting a fight that I didn't have the courage to fight as a player, and loads of us of my generation didn't have the courage to fight. So because of their actions now, we'd hope that our future female players won't have to fight that fight. But we're at another juncture, Shane, and we've spoken about this numerous times. I've spoken with Marie on this, you know, that the disconnect between the governing bodies and the LGFA, I suppose I can speak from a football perspective, the disconnect between them and their most important players, their most important stakeholders, Shane, the players, it's so overwhelmingly apparent at this stage. It's really distressing. Like, on the surface, from the statement, which I suppose we'll get to shortly, there appears to be very little empathy on behalf of the association in relation to what you could call the lived experiences of the players. I mean, listening to that press conference, I watched it back, you know, there was different tales recounted that you actually wouldn't believe. Like, you wouldn't believe in this day and age. So how, I suppose, the association feel that these players can wait until integration is put through for this charter to come about, because integration is going to be minimum 5 years. And just to see, you know, with the players, Shane, like, they're not asking for conditions to be equalised tomorrow. Like, that's really not the case at all. They're literally looking for a pathway towards closing that gap. They're very realistic. They've acknowledged that the LGFA don't have the funds. They've acknowledged that the Camogie Association don't have the funds. So I suppose, looking at that, the GAA have a huge part to play here, Shane, and the resources that they have to be shared, I think. And again, going back to past events, you know, we've heard GAA presidents speak regrettably about how they didn't push through integration. So there's a big opportunity here for the GAA and for Larry McCarthy, and I think the government as well. And I always say it, I think there has to be political will for all of this to come about. I suppose what I would see is doing the right thing. And, you know, just before we bring Aisling in here, I have to say, you know, there has been excellent work done by the LGFA. You know, I'm not here to slate them at all. You know, over the last 25 years, Helen O'Rourke has led that association brilliantly. I wrote a piece on Helen last year when she was in the job 25 years, and researching and looking back at what she's done, it was absolutely incredible. But we need her to step up again here now, and we need the association as a whole to step up, because this probably is the biggest challenge that they're going to face because of the funds. And there's likely brilliant people on county boards all over this country who work in a voluntary capacity who are thinking, we don't have this money. And they don't, but it has to be found somewhere, Shane. So there has to be a collective, and I just urge them all to get around a table and talk, just start discussions. You look at that state of play report from the GPA and you read that, and you finish reading that and you think, okay, we have to get around a table here.
Aisling Connolly, what was your reaction when it did first come out on Monday?
Hi Shane, hi Nadine. When it first came out on Monday, I guess I was happy, I guess, in one way, that a stance and a strong stance and a collective stance by all of the teams who have come together to put this out to, you know, media and to journalists and get some airwaves, you know, and get people talking about it, because it's been going on for far too long in terms of inequality, in terms of substandards for female athletes. And I agree with Nadine wholeheartedly that players are not asking for unrealistic measures to be put in place. And what they're asking for, and we've heard this term charter, and a lot of people listening might not know what the charter was. And to be honest, when I first heard it myself on Monday, I had to look up what a charter, what they were actually asking for. And it boils down to, you know, kind of two priority areas, really. One is they're asking for fuel expenses to be paid. And I think that is a very realistic ask. Anyone is not out of pocket that they are, you know, good enough to play for their county team. You have the majority of State of Play report goes on to say that you have got more females in college than male, you know, when you're playing sport. So 43% of females playing sport, whether it's camogie or football, are students, whereas it's 24% playing, it's males in college. So, you know, you have people travelling down from Dublin, you know, to you know, Cavan, for example, with playing football or whatever sport it is, and they're out of pocket because they are not able to, you know, they have to pay their own expenses. So fuel expenses on the charter is the first thing that they're asking. The men get 70 cent per mile, and that's what the females are asking for. And then the second priority is kind of the minimum standard. It's not even asking for equality here. It's just to get to the basics. And that is, like, we're looking for, or the female athletes are looking for, meals after training and games, access to a team doctor. Like, shockingly, almost 80% do not have regular access to a team doctor. 49% do not have access to a nutritionist. And what we know from research is that, like, underfueling in sport leads to injuries in female athletes. It leads to immunity and hormonal concerns, anemic, iron deficiency, low mood, etc., etc. So in terms of, like, what the statement says in terms of player welfare and respect, there are gaps in player welfare when female athletes don't have access to team doctor, for example. 80% don't have access, regular access to a team doctor. 49%, as I said, don't have access to a nutritionist. You know, I was only talking to, I'm based in Limerick. I bumped into a Limerick camogie player today, going into the gym actually, and they have a niggle on their knee. And I was like, are you paying now for that physio yourself? You know, in light of the protest. And she was like, yeah, I am paying for that, you know. And they're lucky, the Limerick Camogies, they get sponsored by the Fitzgerald Woodlands House Hotel here, who give them access to, you know, the gym full membership and pre and post training meals. But, like, that is not, you know, I speak on behalf of my own county, Galway. They don't get any mileage either for going training. And you've girls coming from Athlone College, you know, from Dublin or wherever they may be working or studying. So, it's a big issue. It's time for change. A lot of people listening might not know that, you know, the GAA does not include the LGFA and the Camogie Association. When we talk about integration, that's what we're talking about, is that the three governing bodies become one governing body. And because they're three different separate organisations, and because there's politics at play and different roles and amalgamation has to happen, you know, as Nadine said, it could take up to 5 years for that to happen. And it's already been agreed, it's already 18 months has passed since this has been announced, that yes, we are going to integrate into one organisation. And the players have not seen any change, or very little change, in terms of welfare, in terms of these minimum standards that they're looking for. So they have to, you know, they felt compelled from listening to that statement on Monday, Nadine, that you were listening to as well. It feels like that they had no other choice but to come out with a statement like this and to take action like this to elicit change.
I do just want to quickly jump in there to note that the Camogie Association and the LGFA did release statements of their own. The Camogie Association said the concerns outlined in the report were discussed and it was agreed to consider the more detailed information and identify priority areas to be addressed. Yeah. The Camogie Association remains available for further discussions and awaits the more detailed information as requested under the current inter-county governance support scheme. Inter-county Camogie players are eligible for team supports worth up to €14,000 per team, which covers physical and performance support, facilities, nutrition and gear. Additionally, individual annual expenses funding worth £1 million €673,571 available to inter-county players, which is divided between teams and players. This is managed through an annual squad charter process where county boards, player representatives and team management jointly sign the plan. The total funding of just over £5.5 million for the inter-county government support scheme in 2023 is equivalent to the funding provided to male counterparts on a pro-rata basis, ensuring equal financial support for both codes. And as part of the ongoing integration progress, player charter for both male and female codes will be agreed upon in due course. The LGFA described its reaction to the statement as one of surprise and said, despite claims to the contrary, the LGFA were actively involved in correspondence arising from the publication of the GPA State of Play Equality Report. Their statement said that the LGFA takes issue with the suggestion that the intercounty players are treated like second-class citizens. It should be noted, in 2023, over 1.4 million of government funding will be allocated to intercounty squads to assist with player expense claims. Of this figure, over €900,000 allocated directly to player expenses, while almost €500,000 is designed for LGFA team funding. The Central Council continues to recognise and acknowledge the vital role of the intercounty player, and earlier this year agreed to the that the full LGFA allocation of government funding will be assigned to player expenses for 2023, with the LGFA self-funding the team element for counties. Just to note the response of both organisations, Nadine.
Yeah, and I look on the LGFA response, I suppose, in terms of the communication, listen, I can't dispute that. Mm. One side is saying one thing, the other side saying the other. Listen, I'm not going to comment there. But what I was really surprised as well and disappointed was that the LGFA took an issue with the suggestion that the players are treated like second class citizens. They are. I mean, yeah. The basic definition of a second class citizen is somebody belong, and I'm quoting here, someone belonging to a social or political group whose rights and opportunities are inferior to those of the dominant group in a society. The lads are the dominant group, the women are the inferior group, and they're being treated differently. That's not the fault of the LGFA at the minute, but they can work here. They can all work together to change that. It's different how they're provided for. Also, to go back to funding, I mean, and again, this is no fault of the LGFA. The GAA had a surplus of 19 million last year, Shane. The LGFA, in contrast, it was only 890k. Like, that's massive. So that has to be highlighted as well when these funds are being, you know, being sought out. And I think as well, you know, I always look at the 10%. It's a great fact, like, in terms of elite female athletes, there's 10% of female athletes, let's say, in this country. And they've chosen to play our national sport. They could have gone and played, you know, they're elite, so they probably would have excelled at rugby or soccer or whatever other sport they could have chosen. But they chose Gaelic football, or they chose camogie, and they just want a conversation around the table here with those who have a duty of care towards them and a responsibility, I would feel, to ensure their welfare is prioritised. And it's just welfare here. And just, you know, I'll finish on this as well. I just feel like sport is meant to mirror our society, and sport is probably the only part of our society at the minute. GAA is the only sport as part of our society at the minute that really isn't mirroring that. Like, we're so far behind in equality compared to education, workplaces, etc. So listen, I really commend the players for this, Shane. I really do, and I just think fair play to them, and I really hope it prompts the positive response that they need, because so many girls who sat up on that stage on Monday and spoke so with so much heart and so much, I suppose, honesty, they could retire in less than 5 years. You know, give them a chance to just play football at the highest degree. And I'm just looking through the notes here, 14,000 that the camogie allocated per team wouldn't even cover your floodlights for the winter. So, you know, it's so much has to change.
Yeah, that's Aisling, go on.
Yeah, I agree totally. So much has to change. And I wonder, are the measures that the female athletes talking about in terms of, you know, striking, in terms of not talking to the media or not, you know, delaying, you know, a start time of a game by 20 minutes or covering, you know, the Camogie Association or the LGFA Association logo on their jerseys, is that actually going to have an impact? I know Tom Parsons in some of his correspondence, he said at the moment the strike potential is just isolated to the female members of the GPA. But if we don't see any traction, we may include all full membership of the GPA, which would include our male counterparts or the male membership. And I think if that was to happen, then there would be uproar and then there would be change, and you'd have every media person talking about it and it would be written on every paper. And then, and that's, I hope it doesn't have to get to that, but I think it may have to get to that to speed up this integration, to speed up this charter that that they're asking for.
Yeah, Aisling, and you know, having spoken to a few players over the last week, you know, there is a feeling there that the support from the male counterparts, it's strengthening. Every time something like this comes up, you can see it online, but I think it's more tangible amongst the players themselves. And I think that's a realistic thing that could really, really happen. And I think that's what might have to happen, because still it's the lads who hold the power in that regard. And, you know, communication and money equates to power. So I think the lads will have a big part to play in this. Mm. And in the meantime, you'd hope that they continue to be vocal, they continue to support the female, their female counterparts. And that's what we need.
Certainly. Agreed. Certainly. It's going to be very interesting to see where this goes, because I mentioned a lot of the figures there, and we're only half an hour to cover the show, so I was trying to read as quickly as possible. Damien Lawler has a full article on the RT Sport website, which outlines the whole kind of state of play of where we are, and Nadine and Aisling brilliantly voiced kind of more information on that as well. So something has to give, because we can't see any senior or indeed intermediate or junior player, inter-county player, play under protest and have these issues continue and reel on, and hopefully integration does occur sooner rather than later. Aisling, we did have some matches to talk about as well in the Camogie Championship. So we've a couple of matches to review and indeed a couple of matches to preview. If we are to start in Group 1, there were victories for both Cork and Galway. Matthew Toomey admitted relief being the prevailing emotion as his Cork team brought a four-game losing run in three different competitions to an end in the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship with a 3-19-1-10 victory over Down. Would you agree relief is probably the shared emotion of the players?
Absolutely. Like, fair play to Down. They really put it up to Cork. But Cork were just, you know, too strong in the end. And, you know, you had Katrina Mackey and you had Amy O'Connor, player of the match, who really kind of, when it came down to it in the second half, really just showed their leadership and the great players that they are, and, you know, ran away with it in the end. But Cork now, you know, have to, you know, they lost to Galway by 3 points in their first group game away, and they go and you know, face Clare 1st of July, so that's a big game for them, and Clare will be hurting after losing to Galway last weekend by a goal in a very, you know, tightly contested game. So yeah, I think Cork will be glad to have the win, but that's not to understate or downplay Down, who gave them a great game of it, and who are real contenders in Group 1, and it's great to see, you know, new teams emerging like Down and Antrim in Group 3, who have automatically qualified for the knockout stages. So, and then when you talk about the Galway and Clare game, you know, played in tough kind of thunderstorm conditions on Saturday, and as a former Galway player, like, it was always very hard to play Clare. They kind of grind it out, and they're very tough, and they were no different, you know, last Saturday in Ennis. And you know, it took a goal in the second half by Siobhan McGrath, who's back now to full fitness, to secure that win by 3 points. So Galway have 100% record, and you know, they're top in that group. They'll qualify, and they actually play down next, and it's kind of a must win for Down, or else they are, yeah. So good games, competitive games, you know, there's the Camogie Championship this year. I think, you know, we're only in the second group games for many of them. You know, it's not long started, but I think the highlight so far and the good success story has been of Wexford, you know, drawing with Kilkenny. So Wexford, when I was playing, you know, they broke our hearts so many times, beating us by 2 points in two All-Ireland finals in 11 and 13. And then they've just, you know, fallen off the wagon, really, is what you could say. And they were, you know, in the lowest, you know, form for a couple of years there. But they seem to be, you know, back on track under Colin Sunderland's management. They have lots of kind of new players this year. I think seven played lined out against Kilkenny that that were played last year, and they were 10 points down and they came back to draw, which was absolutely mega. You know, they're the All-Ireland champions, Kilkenny. So that's a good camogie story, and the more teams that we get competing against, like the likes of Kilkenny, Cork and Galway, who have been the top three teams for, you know, the last 5 to 8 years now, it's great to see that.
Will they get over Tipperary this weekend?
Yeah, that's going to be a good game. I'd put my money on Tipperary. They won Munster this year. They beat Dublin comprehensively, you know, again led by Cort Devan, the, you know, one of the best players in the country, 2 goals against Tip, and you know, they have a few others, obviously Eamon McGrath popping up with 5 points against Dublin. Tip might just be too strong for Wexford, but with the likes of Ciara O'Connor, Anya Lacey and Shelley Keogh, who were brilliant against Kilkenny, anything could happen. But I think Tip might just edge it.
Sticking with Group 2, just on our previews, Aisling, before I let you go, Kilkenny, you'd suspect they'd have too much for Dublin in Parnell Park this weekend?
You would. And so this is a repeat of the Leinster final, and Kilkenny won that this year by 4 points. So Dublin really put it up to them. That's why it was actually quite surprising when they lost significantly to Tip, to like 219 to 1-6 in the first group game. But when you, I think Kilkenny are going to be no more than kind of the hurlers, Waterford coming up against Tip. You know, Waterford were hurting after the couple of defeats. I think Kilkenny will be hurting after their poor performance against Wexford and letting go a 10-point deficit. So they're going to come out all guns blazing, and you'll have the likes of, you know, their regulars, Denise Gall, Katie Power, you know, Julianne Malone, Katie Nolan, they'll all be up for it. And I think a strong addition to Kilkenny is the fact that Kellyanne Doyle now is back from doing her cruciate injury, and she was impactful against Wexford in the last game. So yeah, you would expect that Kilkenny would be quite stronger than Dublin. In saying that, Dublin, you know, Aisling Maher and Aisling O'Neill are very, very strong players and have contributed very well this championship so far. But I just think Kilkenny will be hurting, and it's kind of, they'll be wounded, and they will know that they won't be, they'll have to be bring a big performance, and I think they will do that.
Absolutely. Okay, two matches to look forward to this weekend. Dublin Kilkenny at 2 o'clock and Wexford Tipperary at 4 o'clock on the 24th. Aisling Connolly, thank you very much. As Aisling mentioned there, Waterford, Galway and Antrim all securing places in the last six, at least by making it 2 wins from 2 against Limerick, Clare and Offaly respectively. That trio will go into the final round in a fortnight, targeting top spot in their groups, with 2 of the 3 number one seeds earning direct progression to the semi-finals. In the football, Nadine, let us start with Group 3, and that's not just because Dublin were playing, but it's probably fair to say it was the most dramatic match, not only on the pitch but off the pitch as well.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great spectacle. It's what the season has needed, Shane, to be honest. There was a great bit of crack in the sideline. Now the management got involved, the refs were involved, but you know what was great at the end of it? The two managers stood side by side, interviewed together. Not a bother, very honest. It was excellent. But listen, on the pitch, you know, we questioned last week whether Kerry have recovered from that forgettable Munster campaign. I'd say not fully yet, but definitely on the way. You know, it was a really difficult assignment, a job very well done. Listen, Louise Navarro-Hertig, we questioned her performance the last while. I haven't seen Leah Caffrey have such a difficult time in years. Leah had to be moved off her. Louise was phenomenal. Kerry's kicking game, very refreshing. It was excellent. Dublin pressed. You know, they pressed at the end. They missed the penalty. They had chances. overall, Kerry definitely deserved it. Kerry had two sin bins as well, and Dublin were lucky not to get any sin bins, to be honest. And I think something Dublin will look at the next day is definitely their kickouts. Abby Shields looked very ropey at times. So listen, they've a lot to fix. Not too much to fix. And they face, remind me there, you have a time.
They Waterford, are facing Cavan.
Or Cavan, sorry. Yes.
2 p.m. throwing in Breffni Park on Sunday.
Yeah, listen, and again, no disrespect to Cavan, but I just think Dublin have been at it another level for such a long time. That they should win that. Not easily, you know, but they should get through.
Okay, so Dublin, the defeat, not too much of a setback, and Kerry won't be getting ahead of themselves after a poor Munster campaign, but in terms of looking forward to the All-Ireland campaign, Kerry 2-8-1-9 winners in Parnell Park. If we go back to, we're not doing a chronological, let's just go to Group 2, because Nadine Doherty, the rumours of Donegal's demise were greatly exaggerated. Donegal's victory,
as I said last
week, as not predicted by you.
You're not reeling me in. I had a good sense that they probably would get through this game, even though on the scoreboard it probably doesn't reflect how comfortable it was for Donegal. Waterford just didn't show up, and when they did press in the second half, they missed a huge number of frees. Had they converted them, they may have put a bit of pressure on Donegal. But listen, Donegal improving again. They were able to do it without Karen Guthrie and Tanya Kennedy, who were on the bench. Massive boost. Geraldine McLaughlin came off the bench with 10 minutes to go, surprised the whole country. So listen, they're building, they're right there. Niamh Hegarty, star of the show again. They were kicking the ball, they played very well, but we're not going to get ahead.
All-Ireland contenders, Donegal.
No, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves, Shane, come on.
for Waterford though, I know we're kind of laughing about it, but how big of a defeat is that for Waterford, because they now, they welcome me to Friar Free this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, they need points on board.
Yeah, it was a game that both teams really would have identified as a must win. And I just feel the manner in the way Waterford lost the game would be very disappointing for them. Listen, Meath, the coaching team from last year, back in. Now, I know the Meath men are playing at the same time, so I'm not sure if those lads will be in the sideline, which could, you know, having them on the sideline is always a massive boost. But I do expect a big response from Meath. I expect them to come out like a totally different team, to be honest. And they should get the 3 points, which would end Waterford's campaign, I suppose.
Okay, Donegal 2-10, Waterford 1-8 in that one. In Group 1, Laois 2-8, Armagh 3-12. On the balance of play, does a 7-point win slightly flatter Armagh?
Yeah, I would have felt so, Shane, to be honest. You know, we spoke last week about Laois. You'd hope they would have learned from the league final and set up a little bit more compact and defensively, which they did, not having to deal with Amy Mack, and I suppose she started on the bench. That was a big plus for them. But they were compact, they were very good. They really put the press on Armagh in the middle third of the game. They got two brilliant goals, brought themselves right back into it, and Armagh, I suppose, did need a breakaway goal at the end set up by Amy Mack and to just get themselves over the line. They did deserve it, but again, I'm just not fully convinced. However, in fairness to them, I thought their middle third was very good. Eve Lavery, Blaheen Mackin, Niamh Coleman, they actually won a lot of primary possession at crucial times. And it was just Armagh's ability to kick from distance, really, that was the difference. And their experience, I think, over the last couple of years at senior level, just it showed. But listen, Laois, some excellent performances. I was really impressed with Sarah Ann Fitzgerald. She didn't stop running all day. And Lauren Ernie from wing back, another excellent performance. And Lauren Marie Maher up front just looks like a top, top footballer.
Will a performance of the same level be enough for Armagh to get over Mayo this weekend, or will they need to lift it a bit more?
Going by Mayo's performance in the Connacht final, I think Armagh are really going to have to lift it. Okay. It'll be a difficult task for them. Not out of their reach, but they will have to go up another level, for sure.
Okay, finally in Group 4, Galway 3-11, Cork 1-11. Big response from Galway. How did this one play out?
Yeah, it was a really good game, actually, Shane. I was surprised at how poor Cork were, to be honest, overall. I mean, I've been talking about their forward line all year. They scored 1-3 from play. Very disappointing. To me, they just didn't come out in the second half. But in saying that, huge kudos to Galway. I really liked the way they set up. They moved Alva Davern in full forward. They kicked the ball into her. They played much more of a free-flowing game of football. I thought Louise Ward was excellent in the second half, especially. She just epitomised everything good about Galway. They kicked scores from distance, they mixed it up, they were able to bring on substitutes. Kate Slevin in particular, she contributed 1-2 with 10 minutes to go, and Galway looked like the Galway that I expect from them, and that's why I'm so hard on them every week, because I just think they're a fantastic team. They'll be delighted with that. Cork, very disappointed with that. They'll definitely have a lot of reflecting to do.
And you'd expect Galway to make it 2 wins from 2 when they travel to take on Tip in Temple Tuohy on Sunday at 2 p.m.
I would, but I do expect a big performance from Tipperary. Tipperary, okay. Yeah, they're always a team who they never let you down in how they perform. I think it'll be very tight. I would feel Galway are favourites, but I wouldn't be surprised if a really, really tight game. It'll be very entertaining, and I know I say it all the time, but listen, just watch it, because when Aisling Maloney is on the pitch, she's worth the watch.
Absolutely. Well, very best luck to all the teams, including all Ireland contenders, Donegal and the team. Pleasure.
I'm not saying it.
Pleasure as always. 4 big matches to look forward to. Aisling Connolly, thank you very much for contributing a little bit earlier, and Nadine Doherty for your thoughts on on-field matters and off-field matters. Carl Denny is going to be dialing in live from Poland after a good day for Team Ireland at the European Games. Stay with us here in Game On 2FM. Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game On. Carl Denny joins me live from Poland on a good day of action for Team Ireland. It is the second day of action at the European Games, which saw Team Ireland move into the lead of Division 3 in the athletics programme, the event that takes the format of the European Team Championships. Also competing were the women's double in paddle, who bowed out to the seeded German pairing after an impressive battle. BMX rider Ryan Henderson will be in action later tonight following a postponed competition due to thunderstorms. Cottle, let us start with my first sentence there. Team Ireland move into the lead of the Division 3 in the athletics programme. You might put a bit of context into that and discuss the good form of Irish athletes today.
Yeah, I think for the average sports fan, it can probably be a little confusing, because it feels like there's some form of European Championships maybe twice a year sometimes. But yeah, this is a very different European Championships to what we had in Munich last year. So Munich was a multi-sport European Championships. So was the European Games, but they're basically kind of competing events trying to do the same thing in sort of creating a European-style Olympics. It's worked in some sports like boxing, other ones like modern pentathlon, you know, they are genuine European Championships are here. For athletics, it hasn't got on board with it really in terms of it holding its actual European Championships, but it has given it the European Athletics Team Championships, which is what it says on the tin. It is a team championships where you, each individual in each race, you have one competitor in each event, they earn points that all get tallied up at the end. Three teams go up and I think three teams go down. Ireland is usually just three divisions. Ireland normally sits in the second division historically. Our track athletes normally fare well, and our field athletes not so much. We don't have much tradition there, so that's why we kind of can't quite get into the top division. But because Ireland didn't go to the last edition 2 years ago due to kind of COVID restrictions around travel, we were automatically relegated due to a no-show down to Division 3. So we're down there with the Montenegros, the San Marinos, against Israel and Austria, currently battling Israel and Austria for the top spot. And barring absolute disaster or a complete no-show, the bus breaking down tomorrow, Ireland will be in one of those top three spots and heading up to the second division.
Okay. Well, so it was a good day, as I mentioned, for Team Ireland today to put us into that position. Cork's James Isonu got Ireland off with a perfect start this morning, taking victory in the men's 100 metre hurdles. The good results continued with Sarah Lavin also securing victory and maximum points in the women's 100 metres with a season best 12.82 seconds. Now, we will get through the other results, but I do just want to mention Sarah Lavin's result in particular, because it was a season best and just 0.03 seconds off a PB and the second fastest time of her career. Now, I know, Cathal, you wrote a piece for the Examiner that's up on the Irish Examiner website, and you can find it on Cathal Denny's Twitter as well, linked to it. A very moving piece with Sarah Lavin, who, of course, lost her partner recently, the rally driver Craig Breen. So to be back competing and at this level, it's amazing.
It truly is. You know, I've met Sarah at different events around the circuit, and we go back probably 20 years. We were in the same club once upon a time down in Emerald AC. And just, you know, I always like Sarah has always been one of the toughest athletes you'd ever meet, along with being one of the most classy and talented athletes, and that's classy people you'd meet as well. She's always so nice, no matter whether it's a good, bad or indifferent run she's just had. She's great to deal with. And yeah, she's faced, you know, the toughest thing anyone could ever possibly face, losing their boyfriend, losing their loved one in certain circumstances only 2 months ago. And she obviously hit absolute rock bottom in the weeks after that. And I don't know how she's found the strength, but eventually perhaps just a slice of normality going back to the track and getting back on the horse and doing something that she knows that Craig Green would want her to do, which is just continuing to racing. Now, to do that is one thing, but to do it as well as she's doing it is a whole different level of impressive. I mean, Sarah's best is 12.79, her lifetime best for the 100-meter hurdles. In the last few weeks, she's run 5 of the top 10 fastest times of her career. And today, an early morning race here in Poland, no one of any caliber against her. She was basically doing a time trial down the track on her own. And she runs 12.82. And she came off the track and said, Noelle, her coach, probably wouldn't be happy with a certain technical thing. So somehow, some way, Sarah Lavin is in the form of her life in the most unimaginable circumstances possible. And yeah, it's just so inspirational to watch as she kind of continues on that road to the World Championships.
Absolutely. One nugget in your article, and I encourage people to read the article, but just I love that Craig's friends got Sarah a little plate that she has on her laces, on her running shoes with CB initials on it as well. And Sarah was saying anywhere she runs now, Craig will be with her.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful thing that they've done for her. And Craig and Sarah has often, every time I talk to her, she talks about Craig's friends, Craig's family, and how, you know, they've been, I suppose, rocks to just cling to in the storm, because they are the people who are obviously feeling the exact same thing she's feeling in over these last 2 months in the absence of Craig. And yeah, he's remembered fondly. And I know anytime Sarah thinks of what conversation they would have and what Craig would want her to do, it would be to get out there and do what he always did, which is just live your childhood dream and use your talent to the maximum of its ability.
Absolutely. Well, she is running superbly at the moment, and long may it continue. Elsewhere, there was victory for Louise Shanahan in the women's 800 metre, Thomas Barr in the men's 400 metre hurdles, the men's 4x100 metre relay, Ellie McCartney in the women's pole vault, and Sean Mockler in the men's hammer throw. So there's been success in a variety of fields.
Yeah, there has been. And you know, you don't want to be a negative person here, but like, there should be success, you know, in terms of the Ireland is a cut above its competition here. You know, you're talking of, like I said, about kind of Israel and Austria, the two leading contenders. But after that, there's a lot of kind of, I would say, kind of almost laughable standards in across the board in some of the competitions, because a lot of these nations, like the Montenegros and that, the San Marinos, they just don't have the depth. So Ireland should, it's only going to be a very brief visit down to the third division for Ireland, and it will be coming straight back up. We know that. I think, though, the big thing, the big gauge of success will be whether they can beat Austria tomorrow. They're currently on 327 points. They're just 7 points clear of Austria. And then Israel aren't far behind either with 290. There's 2 days down, 1 to go. And I think the strongest day for Ireland in terms of the talent we had in the track and field was out there today. So it could go either way tomorrow. And I think it won't really make a difference. You know, they're going to be going up to the second division anyway. But just for pride purposes, they'll want to get that win. Now, they had a couple of hairy situations today. You know, Rhys Ademola, one of the biggest young talents coming up in the long jump, he had a disaster of a competition, 3 fouls. Just the track finding them out, really, the speed of the runway there. And also in the women's 4x100-meter relay, they botched the last exchange, and I don't know how they didn't drop the Bratton or break the zone, but that they conceded the win because of that to Austria and a few crucial points as well. There was a lot of pressure though on a lot of the other athletes going out there. You know, the men's 4x100 in on a very wet track just minutes later were going out there knowing they had to get that maximum points tally, and they did. You know, Israel Olatunde, Mark Smith, Christopher Sabanda and Joseph Ojuwumi, much of that same quartet was in Munich last year, and they broke the zone and were absolutely devastated to do that out there on the big stage. So, you know, some I suppose amends made today.
Absolutely, and the action continues tomorrow. Call Denny Shinnae. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for. Thank you very much for taking the call from Poland. Unfortunately, we've run out of road, and I do want to apologise. I did promise you to bring you some of the Irish Women's National Team press conference with Vera Powell and Chloe Mustaki, but there is full coverage on the RT Sport website. You can read about all the quotes there. And tomorrow we will have a full build up to tomorrow's match, sold out match in Tala, Ireland against Zambia. Marie Crowe, Rebecca Cray will be on tomorrow. tomorrow's show. Plus, we'll have Adrian Eames out in Talla Stadium for us as well. So, Sinead, thank you all very much for listening. Thank you very much to our contributors, and indeed to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis for ensuring the show ran smoothly off outside of studio. As I read who's coming next, Beta Da Silva is new tunes on the way. Anya Dean, Lucy Blue, Still Blue Music, Killer Mike, plenty more besides. So stay tuned to 2FM. He's up next after the news.